This term, we are exploring a variety of topics around food and hospitality. Today we've been sitting around tables eating together, which feels very appropriate in light of all we've been talking about. So as you sit around these tables, I want to trace a little a Christian understanding of hospitality. Like lots of things, hospitality has shifted and evolved over time. I think often we need to look back in order to then look forward and imagine how hospitality might be expressed today. Hospitality originally meant the love of stranger. And for a long time, this was something Christians were known for. This commitment to the stranger was formed from our scriptures, arising out of ancient stories that celebrated hospitality. The early church would sit around a table and hear a story like this one, perhaps, from Genesis. Abraham sits at the entrance of his tent, trying to cool down. Everything limps under the glare of the sun. It is the middle of the day and it is hot. But Abraham is grateful for the trees that bring him shade. Dust stirs on the horizon. He peers forward and sees three travelers approaching. They stop at a respectful distance, signaling they mean no harm. So Abraham does what any good host would do. He gets up and he goes to greet them. He knows what it means to be a wanderer, a trader, always on the move. That has been his life since God first called him to leave all that was familiar behind and become a nomad. Trusting God can be risky. Being a wanderer isn't easy. In fact, sometimes it is extremely dangerous. There are some who might seek to harm you, rob you, attack you. And then there are just the elements to contend with. There is beauty, but also harshness in the wilderness. One of the things Abraham has learned is how much he needs others. He relies on God. He relies on his family. He relies on strangers who have at times welcomed him and given him food and a place to rest. And so, in return, he offers the same. This is what you do. You welcome and support other travelers as you pass by one another. As Abraham draws closer to these three figures, he notices something about them. Maybe the way they carry themselves, maybe their clothes, but something about them stirs him not merely to just greet them, but to get down into the dust and bow in welcome. Genesis 18, verse 3. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant." There are rules, norms that have developed over time to help smooth over the awkwardness of welcoming a newcomer. The aim is to transform the relationship from stranger into guest. So you begin by offering a little water, a little rest, a little bread. You don't want the traveler to feel uncomfortable, to feel like they are imposing in any way, but you don't want to offend them in case they don't want your help. But these guests accept Abraham's hospitality. They do so aware of these norms. Limits are set. At this stage, there is no offer from Abraham for them to stay the night. Sometimes travelers would stay the night, but it was known that three nights was generally considered the limit. After that, the burden would be too much on the host. Abraham hurries back to the tents and lets Sarah know that they have visitors. He starts preparing not a little meal at all, but one that is quite generous, one that will take some time to prepare. Sarah has to knead and bake the bread, while Abraham goes looking for a good calf, which he kills and they begin roasting. Milk and curds are brought out. Presumably, while all this is happening, the travelers have a chance to wash the dust off their faces, sit under the trees and cool down. Abraham eventually joins them, and there under the trees they chat, getting to know one another. The food comes out, and in response to such generosity, these guests offer a blessing in return. It is common for guests to offer words of thanksgiving and blessing, but these guests go further, promising that Sarah will finally have the long-awaited son within the year. Sarah overhears and laughs in disbelief, but Abraham suddenly seems to grasp that these strangers he's been hosting are not just regular traders or people passing through, but God. He has welcomed and been blessed by God. Hundreds of years later, the writer of Hebrews, addressing the early church, would remind them of this story. Hebrews 13 verse 2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Show care to strangers. Practice hospitality. This is our way, modeled to us by our ancestors, says the writer of Hebrews. It's risky. The world is a risky place, but Abraham encountered a God who risks, who welcomes and loves the wanderer. Abraham discovered that he couldn't do life without others. He needed to rely on God, on the land, on family, and beyond to even strangers. This is still what people are discovering. We encounter Jesus, or we encounter a stranger reaching out and helping us. We encounter grace, and it is wonderful, transformative. And we finally admit we need others. We gather together as the church, welcomed by Jesus, seeking to welcome one another. The aim is to transform our relationships from strangers into guests, extending our care beyond just family or tribe. That doesn't just happen on a Sunday, but like Abraham experienced, it can happen in the middle of the day, right on your doorstep. You connect with a stranger. You show care and concern, and sometimes in that very process, you might find that you've hosted an angel or even God. This was somewhat easier for Abraham because this was the way of nomads. Hospitality was how you survived in the ancient world. It was also in many ways natural for the early church to be hospitable. As Mike reminded us a few weeks ago, church and home were intertwined, and people had this expectation of receiving and being welcomed by others. It started to change somewhat kind of from the 4th century onwards. Hospitality was still important to Christians, but it looked somewhat different. If the church had been gathering and sitting around tables, which by that point they probably wouldn't have been, they might have heard a story like this. Benedict is born in a dangerous time. What we now call Italy is in turmoil. The Roman Empire is disintegrating. There are invasions, famine, political instability. Benedict's parents send him to Rome for a good education, but he hates what he sees there. The rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer, everyone just concerned for themselves. So he abandons his studies and withdraws to the mountains. It's a steep climb, but he finds a cave and decides to just stay there alone in the cave to be with God. It's risky in some ways, but also safe. He can avoid others, but not completely. In order to survive, he relies on a man named Romanus who lives in a nearby monastery. Romanus comes and visits Benedict. He brings him food, checking that he is okay. Benedict is moved by such hospitality. For 3 years, Benedict prays and lives in that cave and relies on hospitality. Some days he sits outside the entrance of the cave, watching the blue river below. One day he's sitting outside when he notices strangers approaching. Stopping at a respectful distance to signal they mean no harm, he realizes that they are shepherds caring for their sheep. He welcomes them in. They share their food and he blesses them with his wisdom. Moved, they tell others about him, and more people start to wonder and seek out Benedict, wanting to learn what it looks like to be a disciple of Jesus now in this time. He sees their need and leaves the cave. He starts creating new communities, new monasteries who want to pursue Christ. Eventually, around the age of 36, he writes his most famous and enduring work, The Rule of Saint Benedict. This rule sets out the norm for how these communities are to conduct themselves. Kind of simple instructions and yet powerful. So powerful that these instructions will shape monastic life. In fact, there are still monasteries today dedicated to this approach. And one of the pillars is hospitality. Benedict's monasteries are to be known for their hospitality. The monks are to learn to see Christ in every traveller, pilgrim, and stranger they meet. If someone knocks on the door, Benedict instructs, it's a quote from him, "All humility should be shown in addressing a guest on arrival or departure. By a bow of the head or by complete prostration of the body, Christ is to be adored because he is indeed welcomed in them. After the guests have been received, they should be invited to pray. Then the superior or an appointed brother will sit with them. The divine law is read to the guest for his instruction. And after that, every kindness is shown to him. The superior may break his fast for the sake of the guest. The abbot shall pour water onto the hands of the guests, and the abbot with the entire community shall wash their feet." We see this pattern again of norms and rules to help give structure and allow the monks to take in a variety of people and not be overwhelmed. And also to care for the stranger. The monastery becomes a key site for hospitality in the medieval world, a haven for people traveling in dangerous times, a place you know you can turn to if you're poor and in need. There's a lot of good here, but one of the downsides is that less people feel comfortable inviting strangers or pilgrims into their homes. Hospitality in many ways becomes, or begins to become, institutionalized. And this institutionalization of care only increases over the centuries, and in many ways, the practice of welcoming a traveler, a stranger, becomes a distant memory for Christians. So when it does pop up again, it is intriguing. As we sit around these tables, let me tell you one more story closer to our time. Are you familiar with Dorothy Day? I've been reading her biography. Dorothy was born in 1897 in the US. She lives also in changing and dangerous times, world wars, the Depression, nuclear arms race. Her family and friends don't believe in God, less and less people do, and so she grows up not believing in God. Dorothy moves around a lot, but mostly lives in New York City. When she is young, she is poor, with left-wing ideals, wanting to change the world for the better. She also lives wildly at times, drinking heavily, getting involved with men who don't always treat her right. But somewhere in these wanderings, she keeps finding herself curious about God, stopping in at Catholic services to participate in the Mass. She becomes a Christian in the 1930s, to the confusion of many of her friends. And as she's trying to figure out what does it mean to be a Christian, she is also deeply aware of people suffering and wanting to do something about it, but not sure what or how her faith can speak into what she sees around her. And so she prays to God for help. Not long afterwards, she is in her small apartment, which she shares with her daughter and her brother and his wife. She says, "I'm sitting in the kitchen, working on a potential novel, when there is a knock at the door." Her sister-in-law opens the door and sees this unkempt middle-aged French man asking to speak to Dorothy. They welcome him in. Learn his name is Peter, and he wants to talk to Dorothy about exactly the things she is wrestling with. Eventually he leaves, but then he returns the next day and the day after that. Out of these conversations, a stranger becomes a guest and then a dear friend. Together, Dorothy and Peter begin a newspaper, The Catholic Worker. But that isn't enough. In the 1930s, more and more people are finding themselves evicted with no place to live. So, Peter and Dorothy respond by opening up a house of hospitality. They kind of draw from the monastery model, but with less rules, and more with an emphasis on seeking to create a home where anyone is welcome to come and stay. In 1934, they have their first property, an 11-room, four-story building in need of urgent repair. It's a quote from Dorothy. It sometimes seemed that the more space we had, the more people for us to help, so that our quarters were never quite adequate. But somehow we managed. Characters of every description and from every corner of life turned up, and we welcomed them all. Some came with their suitcases, intending to stay with us for a year, and shocked by our poverty, lingered only for a night. Others came for a weekend and remained for years. This house and the commitment to living simply, in poverty, confronts many Christians. Some reject it, but others, particularly young people, get inspired and get involved, opening up houses of hospitality right across the country. It's not easy to run such places, but they feel compelled. This is what Jesus calls us to. These homes remind us of our roots, our calling to be a people who learn to welcome the traveller, the wanderer, the stranger. There are a lot of barriers to such a welcome now. Norms and expectations around this type of hospitality have disappeared. The nature of our homes and our families have changed. In general, we rely on institutions or charities to care for those in need. I'm not exactly sure what it might look like for us to welcome the stranger today. If you have stories, let me know. Hearing from others can kindle or rekindle our curiosity. I guess one of the main ways that we see our wider society caring for strangers is in times of disaster. That's when we really step in. The world can seem risky and dangerous and make us want to hide, and the truth is we need others. Abraham, Benedict, and Dorothy's lives remind us that when we take a risk, a risk often grounded in some form of rule or limits, it's not a crazy risk. But when we risk, when we let someone unexpected into our home, when we sit around a table and speak to someone we don't know, when we experiment with shared housing or other forms of intentional community, when we welcome, when we volunteer and help a stranger in our society, we can end up receiving something that maybe we never expected to receive. We can discover we have been welcomed. We can discover that we have welcomed and hosted God in our midst. And I want us to pray in groups now for that. Let's pray that we'd be prepared to take risks, to reach out, to care, to be open to the unexpected. Let's pray for one another. Christine Pohl, who's written extensively about the need for Christians to recover the ancient practice of hospitality, says this, and I think this is a good quote to end on as we spend time in prayer. A first step in making a place for hospitality may be to make room in our hearts. Whether or not we can always find room in our houses, welcome begins with dispositions characterized by love and generosity. Hearts can be enlarged by praying that God will give us eyes to see the opportunities around us, and by putting ourselves in places where we are likely to encounter strangers in need of welcome. Let's pray that God would help us make room in our hearts.